This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 12th of December, 1952. The title of this lecture is Games, Goals. This lecture is 63 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
Okay. This is the second hour. I understand you want to hear some more about these games. Is that right? Okay. I'll just give you then a breakdown on the list which I gave you at the end of the last hour and explain this thing just a little bit further so that you'll have a good grasp of what we're doing here. You see, the first thing that should be sorted out on any operation is the intention or the goal. This was a practice of the ancient magician. He would become an effect if he had not stated what he was trying to cause. If he just caused at random without ever analyzing what he was trying to do, he was doing at random and heading toward chaos. The difference between thought and matter is that thought aligns in its highest echelon and matter is chaos. Now, the chaos of matter is quite, in addition, a chaos which came about from thought hitting the particles too often and misaligning them. So let's look this thing over. From this standpoint, to have a goal in processing and a stated intention in processing is itself tremendously important in processing. And it's very, very important for the auditor doing the processing to know what he is trying to do and for what he is aiming. He doesn't have to make a terribly full statement of this, but he had better have something so that he can make a full, round statement of his overall, unlimited goal. I don't care if it's an indifferent goal or a not terribly desirable goal. This is the effect toward which he is heading. He wants to achieve this effect. Now, oddly enough, you can run this in a circle if you want to. You can say, I am trying to cause this result. I am trying to get the preclear up to a point where he can be caused. Well, now that's all right, but it's kind of nebulous. It's part of the ingredients of the intention, but it wouldn't be all of the intention. Were you ever part of a group that just went on acting and acting and acting and acting and never got down to saying what they were trying to do? Now, if you get in to any group, political, social, ladies' aid group, anything like that, it doesn't matter, and you find out there's a terrible lot of random motion going on, there's nothing happening, but there's an awful lot of motion, but nothing happening, you've sat down in a piece of mess. You haven't sat down in theta. You're sitting in mist. Random vectors. The difference between a piece of chaotic matter and thought is that the chaotic matter is without goals beyond those goals which somebody else impresses upon it. An orange is a living thing. It knows what it's trying to do. It has been persuaded that it should produce itself so that it will be eaten. And it has found this actually is a good way to plant orange seeds and get them well fertilized so they'll grow. It's make itself quite edible. But it's trying to produce new oranges. It has a goal, very well aligned. And one of the things in which you're in awe in the process of life creation is not so much the complexity out of steps and alkaloids and chemicals used in life creation. But there's that goal, that single, clear, starry goal, and it is simply the goal of produce another thing like myself and lots of them. And what you look at there, you're not looking at mess or the process of complexity, but boy, there isn't another goal that compares to that, to direct beeline intention. And so a fellow, the human race, has sort of bowed down to that, and they sort of take a look around them and see this enormous obsession going on, this fixity on a goal of reproduction of self. And they say life is a wonderful and mysterious process. It is so wonderful and so mysterious that you, when you get up scale and so forth, will be able to imbue something with life. That's really not what life is doing at all. It's just using an existing impulse. It's not making new lives. It's setting up these channel lines so that things can travel down them. It's sort of like a road building crew. But get the interest people get in a well-aligned and fixed goal. Now, if you just have the pre-clear there and you nebulously say, I'm going to make this person well, and then you don't even bother to define what well is, and you don't know what is well, well, you don't have much of a goal for your pre-clear. So you could merely state, and always should state, what you were trying to do for the pre-clear. Not leave it understood or half thought out or say that was part of a lecture sometime and I'm sure that somebody else knows about it, but I don't. You're being an effect when you're saying that, and you're not going to cause, not worth a nickel. To cause things, one must be cause, and the primary requisite of cause is a statement of intention and goal. Primary requisite to be cause is a clear statement of what you're trying to do. And only when you clearly state it can you avoid being yourself an eventual effect. What am I trying to do? If you can't answer that, you'll foul up. Well, let's put it to this limited degree. Your pre-clear comes in, sits down, says, I want so-and-so. And I've always had this bum lock of hair, and I want it to be trained flat. That's his goal. Who was it that had a goal? He got this, tremendous amount of processing or something just so he could grow a couple of hairs or something like that. Or we asked this pre-clear, theta cleared and everything else, what was this pre-clear trying to do? Well, this pre-clear was trying to make it so she wouldn't mind it if her husband scolded her. I mean, really limp. But that's better than not having any goal. Most preachers come in, they say, well, I'm not happy, and so on. I want to be happy. Oh, boy. That's nice and nebulous, too. Beautiful. So let's have action goals, huh? For our pre-clears. All right, one pre-clear comes in, he sits down, and you see this pre-clear is loused up like fire drill, and he doesn't know how loused up he is, and he says, I want to fix it up so ties fit me better. You don't care what he says. The second you accept his goal for him, you are an effect of him. Hell with what he wants. Oh, that's strange. The guy's in a very aberrated condition. And he isn't going to want what he says he wants after an hour's processing. He isn't in any state to make any goal or any decision about a goal. He really isn't. You take a look at him and say, now, let's see. You don't have to tell him. Make a statement. Write it down. Keep one of these 10-cent store ledgers, like I'm always threatening to do when people steal. I'll keep a few cases in a ledger and make a few notes, and the next thing I know, I look around and I say, where's my ledger? There's more of those things parked around the country. people looking for some magic secret or something. What do they find in it? They find effort processing, lecture so-and-so, so-on, just routine processes. Routine is the devil. All right. Well, once in a while, they find some experimental data, like we worked with this preclear on action goals. We had them go down to the dime store and buy 50 sets of glasses and then come back and break them in a number of different ways. Something like that, to see if this improved their vision any. But what's the cause? So you have this little ledger book and you write down Jones misses. And you put the top, age, rank, serial number? Nuh-uh. You don't show this casebook to Mrs. Jones. Dickens, what she thinks about it. After you talk to her for a couple of moments, you put down the hour she reported in. That'll be of value to you later on. Tells you how much time you spent on her in case you want to add up your ledgers. It's quite important. Tell her how long you processed her. Also, you can have that in the book, so that's quite important, too. But how long, length or amount of havingness of Mrs. Jones, this could be a list of. That's really what you're marking down. Now, Mrs. Jones doesn't have you, you understand. That's the way to be a terrible bad auditor. How are you going to have any effect upon a preclear if you're asking the preclear all the time for a license to survive? You don't get many preclears either, by the way. They sort of notice this. You can give them sympathy, but your sympathy is only valuable if you give it from an altitude. And the only way you gain altitude is simply to be caused. And you're caused by locating them in time and space. You tell them when they're supposed to be there and when they leave. Make practice sometime of telling them to leave. You ought to drill yourself on it. All right, you leave now. And by the way, if I were really had the thumbs down around here on processing good and solid, you'd get little assignments like that. But I had to be on deck to straighten them back and forth. I gave a fellow an assignment one time. Now I've given you 5 hours of effort processing and so forth, and his trouble was a tremendous physical infirmity which demonstrated enormous embarrassment. I gave him the assignment of making everybody he met or knew demonstrate that infirmity. Tough assignment. He knew he couldn't do it. He knew he couldn't. So what do you know? A week later, he had gone around and put it into action. Instead of being embarrassed himself, he had managed to make everybody embarrassed that he knew. This guy was a cock of the walk. He was in the most wonderful condition. Just gorgeous condition. For instance, he knew that he would never have the right to talk to a woman, much less embarrass a woman. So I made him go around selectively embarrass women by remarks to them. Not bad remarks, you understand, but just tell them something or other that would make them nervous. Just a little bit. That guy came back and he was feeling benign toward the feminine part of the race, patting them all on the head, and they enjoyed him a great deal. I don't know. He had been able to command these objects. All right, when you're trying to command objects, be cause, and always be cause, and everything else but cause. And when you put down that Mrs. Jones 215, why, you also put down, after you've talked to her for a short time, what goal you intend to achieve with Mrs. Jones. And then she says, well, I can only spend a certain amount of time. I can only spend a certain amount of time, she says, on this, and I only have 5 hours that I can be processed and so forth. It's always a good thing to tell them in no uncertain terms, you'll have as many hours as you need. And if you only need three, you'll only need three. And so, we have a condition resulting here of a preclear who is going to get well. Not a preclear who's going to come in and burn up some time and pay you a fee and go out again and monkey around. Let's get down to some of the niceties of how you handle people. I may not follow my own rules, but I sure know the rules. To a large degree, when I am extremely successful with somebody or other, I have followed the rules. I look back over it. Says, I only have enough time, and I'm going over and have it. Here is, I've got 100 guineas, or I've got 500 bucks, or whatever it is, and I want so many hours of processing for this, and so forth. And you'll say, well, the processing fee happens to be $250 an hour. You'll have as many hours of processing as you need, and if you only need a half an hour, that's all you're going to get. And they say, man must know what he's talking about. He must be able to do things. You think that's offensive language. No. Don't bother to be offensive about it. But it is better to be offensive that way, real mean offensive that way. I don't care whether you come over here or not. It's nothing to me whatsoever whether or not you come over here to get processed. All you can possibly pay me is money. And that isn't worth a damn, and you know it, and you probably aren't worth saving anyhow. You could go to that limit, and it would be better, and you would get more preclears, and you would do more for the preclears than if they came over and you said, well, yes, that's right, and we'll see if we can do that, and that's right, and everything is all very calm, and so on. And, if that's what you want, why, we'll give it to you. No. Don't be so damned agreeable, because that's inflow. Be disagreeable, that's outflow, and they'll want you. Say, yes, you come over here, 2:15, you'll be over here at 2:15, and we'll give you enough hours, many hours of processing as you can. They say, well, I only have 2 hours, and I want to spend it so on. Well, I'm sorry, I can't say how long you'll be. You might only be here an hour, and maybe I might keep you six. Who cares? Give them no margin of placing themselves in time. Because you are much better off in control of the preclear than the preclear is in control of himself during the period of processing. And the way you do that is to place him in space and time. And never let him get the idea he's placing himself in space and time. Once in a while, suddenly call a guy up and say, drop over here at 8 o'clock before you go to work. Rattle him on the subject if you're having trouble with a preclear. You'll find out he'll respond better to processing. This is how you build altitude. But under the name Mrs. Jones, you put down the goal. This squirrely old dame ought to be fixed up so that she could possibly live with her husband. And you just worked right straight toward that goal. And she says, and my lumbago and my arthropedics are all sparthlocated. You don't care. If that has to do with her getting along with her husband, and that's what you've decided she'd better do, that's what's going to happen to her. And what do you know? You've decided what's going to happen to her. She won't affect you. She can sit there and rattle off aberrations and exude glee of insanity and feed out engrams that would ordinarily be terribly restimulative and all that sort of thing, and they won't have any effect on you at all. You know what you're doing with her. It doesn't matter how limited your goal is or how extended your goal is. Just go ahead and do it. Don't even be practical about it. And don't mind changing it. Next day she comes in, you've changed your mind. So shift the goal. But know that you changed your mind on receipt of more data. You've decided she ought to be able to live with her son. But she'd probably be happier doing so. Now, that sounds very funny, making people self-determined by dominating them and controlling them. That's telling you better be responsible for your preclear, and you couldn't be responsible for this preclear at all unless you were willing to control and dominate him during the session. See? If you aren't willing to do that, you're not willing to handle the force of the preclear. Because we're not trying to handle it preclear for bad cause. You're not trying to be bad cause. But maybe you are bad cause. Maybe you move her out of her body and she does a bunk and they bury her. Well, you know that you did your best along the line. You know what you were trying to do. You know what you were trying to accomplish. Things like this can happen. Probably never will happen, but they could happen. Be willing to take the consequence of it. If you are, you go around propitiating and say, give me a license to survive, to everybody you meet. Every time preclear walks in, you say, have you got your license, the license you've got for me? Oh, please sign me a license to survive. You won't make them well. Steel yourself up just on the basis of being cause. And most of being cause is stating the goal. You're willing to state a goal on something. Now, to give you here a goal, we're going to make a theta clear. A person who is going to be stable outside of his body and who does not have to come back in because the body is injured. That is a highly specific but very broad goal. That's what you're trying to make. There is no why you are making a theta clear, you see. You know that in the process of doing this, an awful lot of a guy's upsets and viewpoints and educational malfunctions and all kinds of things will spring. Matter of fact, you can sometimes take somebody and move him out 2 feet back of his head, takes a look at himself, drill him a little bit, orient him space. You don't even stabilize him outside of the body. He comes back in like that. He wouldn't hardly know the guy from the beginning to the end of the session. He's so much better. He's so much more alert and so forth. That's just the theta exterior. All right, you make a good theta clear. You could kick him in the shins or an automobile could run over that body or anything could happen to that body. He would stand there and be outside, not trapped. What you're doing is making a theta trap-proof as far as a body is concerned. I love these short gap, no synapses characters that go around saying, a theta clear is just a theta clear, and that's nothing. Why anybody could be that or do that. Because the astral walkers have been skidding around on their feet for a long time on this subject, and everybody knows that they're theta clears, and anybody can... Oh, piffle. It isn't even vaguely connected. You've got the individual exists and is without a body and no dependence on one beyond his contact and communication line as long as he wants to stay in contact with bodies, but the body doesn't command him, he commands it. That's a terrific goal right there. You got a human being made into a new kind of human being. It's a body being monitored by a trap-proof theta. And that makes quite a guy. Quite a guy. There's a big difference between that guy and Homo sapiens. An enormous guy. This goal is so far beyond the goals of the first book that I don't think you could measure them with light year meters. It's just way beyond anything. Because the bird's immortal. You haven't probably taken even that into consideration, that you've just made a god. What is the definition of a god? It's an immortal. Since time immemorial in this language, the gods are immortals. The immortals are gods. This guy can be, body can be bashed in, so forth. All he's got to do is pick up another one. Knowingly, full knowingly, you've given him his identity, his own identification inside himself as much as he needs it, and his own state of beingness, and stepped him sideways off the track completely of having to flick back through between lives areas and be this effect of God knows what all. The body got killed. It would be a sad thing because he would not be able to collect his social security as himself. That would be real tough, wouldn't it? So don't sell this goal short. You've just made an immortal. So that's a good enough goal. All by itself. Well, if you make your intention of a person, you say, we're going to make a theta clear out of a person. That's what you intend to do with that person, just by definition. But if you don't intend to do that much, let's do something short of that. Let's still state what it is. I'm going to fix up her left hind leg. work till her left hind leg is fixed up, and then drip it. That's the end of that. Or if you were to put down, you're going to make a clear theta clear out of somebody. Oh, no. How can you state you are going to do something of which you do not know the scope and dimensions with an individual? You're going to say, I am going to research the business of being a cleared theta clear with this PC and find out some more about it. Well, that'd be all right, but I'm going to make a cleared theta clear out of somebody. You might as well write down, I am going to make a phi x epsilon with no idea of what a phi x epsilon could possibly be. It is not a goal because it has no scope or meaning. What can a thetan do? Now, we'll say cleared theta clear. You couldn't put down such a goal because that's the postulated outer line, unattainable absolute. Probably anything we understand it to be is probably attainable already. But what is the outermost limit of it? Lord knows. I haven't got any idea. You haven't either. You won't have for a long time. But what do we get then when we look at this? We say, we got a theta clear and we're going to do something more. We're going to process him some more. So you put down as your goal, I'm going to process him some more. Sure, you can go process him some more. You can just process him and process him. And to do what? Well, I don't know, make a better thetan out of him, or... No, you could say, I'll process him some more to get rid of these cants I found on the E-meter as follows. All right, you've got those cants out. End the track. Otherwise, you don't get any end cycles on anything. You just keep going on forever, and your whole life gets dragged out to an interminable piece of endurance. So when you say, I'm going to... Here, you got a cleared thetan. Now, what's my next goal for him? You could put down what that next goal is. I'm going to fix it up so he can lift his body. You can make a statement to yourself. I don't care if you write it down. Make the statement to yourself at a clear moment. What am I going to do for Dokes now that he's cleared today? I'm going to fix him up so he can lift his body. And that's a specific drill. You fix him up so he can lift his body. Then maybe the next time you process him, a few weeks later, you give him a few hours of processing, and he gets a what? You're going to get him up to a point where he can lift up a taxi cab. Now, a taxi cab would be an entirely different project than lifting his body, but they're consecutive on the same line. You get the idea. Specific statement of goals. Now let's look at the overall statement of why we are doing this. Why? Well, the reason why we're doing this would and should be codified before we could adhese or cohese as an operating group to the extent that we would like to be one. Because that would be what the group goal is. What are we trying to do? Well, a group goal to a large degree depends upon the group. I don't happen to be either inclined to or in a position to tell you what your group goal should be. But I can sure give you the data so you can work it out. And if you all put your heads together and decide that's what you were trying to do, all of a sudden a lot of spirit and spark could come in on this. I told a pre-clear one time, he said, well, I can't understand why I've got to originate all this energy. And I said, hey, did you ever stop and think of this one thing? You could probably attract waiters in restaurants much more easily simply by reaching over and taking them sharply by the ear or the shoulder and turning them around and pulling them forcefully into the table. He said, I could. And he worked and he worked and he worked and he worked and he worked. And he came back to see me one day and he says, what do you know? He said, I not only dragged one clear across the restaurant, but I also dragged the head waiter over to the table. And I made them stand there, and then I convinced them that I hadn't done it. And that they were mistaken, that I didn't want anything, and I wouldn't let them go away. I told another preclear, do you realize that you could reach over with a couple of energy beams like this and make any girl smile at you you wanted to smile? He said, you could? No. So he worked, 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 force, energy, energy, had a big goal, force, force, work, 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 work. And he finally goes out and, yes, what do you know? He says, it's an awful artificial smile, though. You can make any girl smile at you. He says it makes them feel so silly. They walk down the street and they look at you and they wonder why they're smiling at you. So, I said, well, you know, if it makes them feel silly, all you've got to do is put those same two things on their motor controls and say, feel pleasant toward me. He said, you couldn't do that. And I said, well, try it. Try it. Feel pleasant toward me. I said, try to get back up the line how pleasant it is to touch them. Skip that. Just feel pleasant toward me. And he says, you know, they do. They exude an awful lot of enthusiasm in my direction all of a sudden. He's been going around doing this all some time. He hadn't got any goal of his own. You just have to keep giving him these little piece goals and so forth. And figure out things that would be interesting to do, that he all of a sudden says, you know, that's awful interesting. And you'll find out his process will just skim forward, just take a terrific rush. You've given him a goal. Now, a group goal is a very necessary thing if your group is going to get interested and go forward. A person's cause is motivated by future. Motivations in the future. What do I want? What do we want? That's cause, and if it's interesting, it sort of pulls us forward to it. So you're making the cause be motivated by something you want to have. And so when you postulate the goal for Mrs. Jones, make it something you want to have. Something that would be interesting to you. I don't care what you do to Mrs. Jones. I don't care if you drop her off the top of the World War State Building. That's your prickler. Of course, if you drop too many of them, why then as a group we have to take a hand, not to punish you, but to placate the police. And somebody'd have to drill up on how you pick the locks on cells or something in order to get your body back out, because there you are walking around and trying to whisper in all your fellow auditors' ears, hey, the body's down in the clink. And I'm so rattled, I can't zap any of these cops. So, what's your goal level as a group? Well, now it frames around this pretty well, truth be told. There are games to make and games to unmake. That's one thing to play a game, and all games have umpires. That's quite another thing to be an umpire to a game. And it's quite another thing to unmake games. You'd say that sounds like a very destructive goal. No, it's not. Because what you do when you unmake a game is you get players together and you say, hey, what kind of a game would you like to play now? You haven't busted their game up willy-nilly. They were perfectly willing at the time you unmade the game for it to be unmade. Actually, you could play the game of unmaking games. Or you could play the game of umpiring a game. As a group, do you realize you could set up as umpires to the group called Mass Universe? It's very strange, isn't it? You could actually walk in. It just sounds so flamboyant that you probably don't think it's completely obtainable. But this is an easier one. You could actually set yourself up so that you just simply say, well, we're the umpire squad, and we decided this Earth, Venus, Mars triangular game here. Got to know something more about this so that it can be played a little more equitably and so on and with a little more interest. And let's find out what rules you're playing by so that we can enforce them. Or there's the game called U.S. and Russia. And you simply set up a nice, conservative, quiet 22.0 tone scale association that simply starts monitoring the situation between the U.S. and Russia. And you say, well, it's all very well for you boys to have conferences And that's all very well, but unfortunately, you don't realize it completely, but you've got to have an umpire present. And you've got to have more conferences. And these conferences have got to be wide open to the peoples of both places. And they'd say, well, why? What do you mean? Well, you'd say, it's like this. And then Stalin and a couple of other generals and things would be finding themselves meeting in a small swamp in the middle of Korea. Yeah, I mean that literally. Pick them up with a nap of the neck and slam them into the middle of Korea. You say, okay, boys, now, we said there's going to be empires in this game. All right, doesn't appear immediately attainable to you, so it's not within your framework of workability. But it'll get there soon enough, and if it gets there and you want to do such a thing, go ahead. Or you can suddenly turn this way. You can just walk around and pick up teams or setups that have gone all to pieces or they've dwindled down to nothing where you have no game. Do you realize the cruelest thing that can happen is for a game to deteriorate to a no-game state? Or there isn't any game possible and everybody's stuck in it? And they've forgotten their rules and they don't know anything about it, and so on? You could, as a small association, simply go around. I'm going to petition the city of Philadelphia to take the wheels off their streetcars and use some gravity bolts or something. Every wheel on those streetcars is flat. As the motorman's head. Anyway, you've got a makingness of games inherent in ending games. You have a responsibility for doing something about broken pieces and players if you decide to end games. Well, you could suddenly put your heads together and say, what do you know? What we're going to do here is we'll set up and just for practice monitor a few of the games going on Earth and find out if their game's going according to our Hoyle. Whose Hoyle? Our Hoyle. Well, we'd have to have Hoyle. We'd have to write Hoyle on the subject of games or Sudro on the subject of games or something of the sort. You decide that this or that was happening or people weren't interested in this game. This game could be pepped up and become more interested. So you become game catalysts. Well, you should pick up. You see, I ran regret on that streetcar and it backed up all that distance. There is a goal, which is an attainable goal. If you were to take in the United States and set yourself up as game umpires, this is what it would amount to. Is the game called business and industry? Is the game called militarism versus politicianism? Are these games running so that they're interesting? Sole consideration. Is the game interesting? No. Well, let's take and adjust the few factors that make it possible for the game to be interesting. Okay. Now, the limitation in the rules of games, the limitations on self and others, is necessary for there to be an interplay. There's got to be a limitation. There's got to be some frame of reference. That limitation can only be as light as an ethical understanding. We're going to operate within ethics. And the reason why there has to be a limitation is not terribly obvious to you now, but is obvious to you from the theory which you have studied for some time. And that theory is simply this. Our whole activity tends to make an individual completely independent of any limitation. That's right. You can get so much bigger than anything you are, and so disconnected from anything you're in contact with, and so completely careless of the fact that this is what's happening. If you can go straight on out, and one person is capable of himself being a universe. Hence, you could do the whole thing yourself. You're that big. But the second that you were that big, you would be imposing limitations on yourself in order to scale down to a size which made you able to play against yourself. And then you'd impose limitations on the two sides of yourself. And you've gone into the same spiral of limitation. You see, limitation is necessary to that degree because there is no limitation, basically, and the limitation itself is an idea of limitation. And when you have an unlimited thing, in order to produce any action or indomity, you've got to limit it to some degree. It's not fair any one of you people could go ahead and rule a whole confounded shooting match all by yourself. So you'd make up a team and say these are the limitations in which you're operating, and they're so and so and so and so and such and such, and change it around as you will. You follow me? Old Aleister Crowley had some interesting things to say about this. He wrote a book of the law. He was a mad old boy. I mean, you'd be surprised, though, that Crowley, Schopenhauer, Nietzsche, Aristotle, all the boys, practically along the line, except the real screwballs like Kant. He was insane. That's why people bought him. They all talked about the same thing. And actually, you can find all these ideas we're talking about someplace in the writings of practically any philosopher who ever thought things over. He couldn't fail to fall headlong across the most salient facts in the case. He never organized them or was able to evaluate or use them. But he had them. Schopenhauer, the will and idea. Try attempted breakdowns of this and that. You read those fellows now, and by God, you say, this guy really made sense. Don't forget, you are talking from an aligned viewpoint of knowingness. You can make anything make sense now. You could even make Congress make sense. Now, if you're going to have a game, you've got to have rules. And if you've got rules, they must be obeyed. And a rule which is not obeyed, or is obeyed just some of the time, or is so bad that it can't be obeyed all of the time, it shouldn't be there at all. And a game which has no rules has no game. It's chaos. No alignment. Nobody to agree on anything or so on. After you'd won something, you'd never want it, you see. There couldn't be a goal in it. So there has to be some sort of an agreement. It's only when the agreements become compulsions on individuals that the game gets very upsetting. And a piece then degenerates into a broken piece, and it nothing is making any sense to him. He knows it's no fun. He isn't a participant, really. He just kind of used, and nobody really wants him or needs him. One of the things your broken piece asks continually, he asks to be needed. He wants to be wanted. He gets way down scale. He hits that bad, that sub-zero on the tone scale. Imagine having to be needed. And so your obedience to the rules, of course, makes it the rule possible. But if they were bad rules, they couldn't be obeyed. What's a good rule? It is a rule which aligns action and permits compliance. That's all. You can't have a rule that doesn't permit compliance. Although we've got a lot of them on the statute books. There are a heck of a lot of rules you can't comply with, by the way. There's a rule in South Carolina that says you have to beat your wife with a stick 1 inch in diameter. Just try and find a stick that's exactly 1 inch in diameter. Furthermore, you've got to have a wife to obey that rule. Furthermore, a rule that doesn't apply to all hands isn't much of a rule. Then you've got a specialized caste system going, which is too complex. Now, unconsciousness of rules to add reality. After you've got the rules, if they're real good rules, you can duck them. You say, well, everybody obeys these automatically. Oh, you're here in this area? Why, of course, in this area we do so and so and so and so. Naturally. Nobody'd think of doing anything else. Well, the fellow says, you got a law about this thing or something? Yes, they say natural law, yeah. God gave it to us. They just left the conference yesterday where they formulated it. God gave it to us. Now, you've got to have ARC with others to play and reverse ARC with others to play. There's got to be another team, and you have to have teammates. But you could go up to a level where your need for ARC didn't exist at all. But you're making a game now. Now, pain is penalty, which will be obeyed. You've got to have the rules obeyed. How do you enforce the rules? You put an automatic enforcement around that everybody desires to use. The second everybody desires to use the enforcement, they will obey it too. They obey it to set an example. Pain is the enforcer in this universe, but don't think that's the only one. It could be you disobey the rules. You disobey the rules, you are immediately surrounded by smoke. And the smoke continues until you're able to obey the rule. Just like that. I mean, I've had no pain involved with it, but it'd certainly be annoying. Now, agreement to rules and penalties is necessary to continue game. A fella has to agree to a game before he can participate in it. And the reason why things have gone bad here on Earth and in the messed universe at large is simply that people didn't agree to this game. They thought they did. This game started out in a very strange way and, of course, went off of its rocker sooner or later. It started out in an effort to never be unmade. Its goal was eternity. Its dream was forever. Can't have anything. The guy that made it up didn't know anything about the necessity to have rules to have a game. Deterioration of game until no game is an inevitability in any game. All games come to an end. This game tried to set up for an eternity. They keep yap, 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 eternity, 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 and hell. There isn't any such thing as time. How the hell can there be an eternity? This is very weird. Eternal, eternal. Boy, every time you turn around in this universe, you see eternity, forever, infinity of time. They don't exist. All right. When a guy is unable to play, it's because he's never agreed to play the game, and somebody's lied to him and said it isn't a game. And how do you do that? You convince a guy he has to work by creating a scarcity and then making his existence, his continued existence, completely dependent upon it. And that's work. Now, a game of complexity and levels. Of course, you've got to have complexity in a game, otherwise it becomes monotonous. Okay, we'll run that on down the line. Now, necessity to have a new game coded before one ends the old game. Otherwise, everyone else becomes a maker of games with no game. Every guy's trying to make his own game, and you just get a general wild scramble. Well, you start ending a game. You kill something without putting something in its place. And the darn thing won't die. Not worth a nickel. It just won't die. What exists has a persistency in its existence. If you've ever tried to knock a group off, you would recognize how unwilling that group is to die. I swear to Pete, you could take every member of a military company and stand them up against the wall and shoot them down, and you'd still have a military company. Proof, the massacre of the 7th Cavalry. We've still got a 7th Cavalry. How could you have a 7th Cavalry? The 7th Cavalry was massacred by the Sioux Indians, the Little Big Horn, in 1876. You still got one. Persistence of existence. Well, the way you do that, you have to get a more interesting game before you end an old game. Now, you want to know why your preclear stays around his body and hangs around and doesn't do anything and doesn't go anyplace? Two things happen. He hasn't found, one, that his mock-ups are more interesting than reality, laughingly called. The other thing he hasn't found is communication in the state which he is in with others. So he feels there couldn't be any IRC, and he's liable to cut himself off completely. These things then have to be rehabilitated. See? And he'll go on, and he'll hold himself kind of static because he doesn't see any upper goal. He doesn't see himself going anyplace. Therefore, it really is of considerable interest that he sees that he can go someplace. Well, if he's just going to the state of Theta Clear, that's fine. Let him go to the state of Theta Clear. That's pretty good. He can still operate as a mortal and be immortal. And boy, that's sure having your cake and eating it too. So, we have then, as far as the group is concerned, quite a wide variety of choices. What does a group do which has in its hands the capability of making games? Ending games. Umpiring games. You found the rules, you see. I mean, here you sit. You got a good group. What do you do? Well, if you want this to be a group, you want to cohes, you kind of have to get together and put your heads together and get some kind of agreement on what you're doing. And then, and only then can the group be cause. If you just idly spin this way and that and not think about it any further than that, the group will not become cause over any large area, but is apt to become an effect of a lot of things. So even though it's a poor goal, it's better than none. You can put that down as a beautiful maxim. It sounds like one of the horrible truisms, but boy, it'll fish you out of more holes than you could possibly imagine you could get yourself into. A poor goal is better than none. You find yourself very often squirreling around and spinning around, and you won't know which way you're going or which end is up, because you've decided all the goals you could put your eyes on were too vague or too poor or too unwanted to try to attain. And that itself is a bad aberration, and it shows a misdirection on your own part and a misestimation on your own part and a lack of understanding on your own part of what you're doing. There is no goal vast enough to absorb your total capabilities, because your total capabilities are so vast that they make goals. You are yourself cause. So how on earth can you set it up so cause can have anything else but cause? Unless you come downscale a little bit. A goal, any kind of a goal, is better than none. You say, what am I going to do? Don't worry about it. You can squirrel on and squirrel on. What am I going to do? How am I going to handle myself? What are going to be my goals? And so on. Sit one up. Any damn thing. Say, I'm going to become, or I'm going to be, or I'm going to have. And goals set up in the capacities of be, do, and have. And the start of a goal is beingness, and the end of a goal is havingness in this universe. But you don't have to set them up like that. You can set yourself up a cycle of action in any direction you want to. Supposing you just don't know what to be, well, just think about it for a while, think about it, and then think about the strangest thing you could be or something like that. And all of a sudden you'll say, you know what? I'll bet I could be the doggondest minister of a Baptist church you ever heard of. Well, silly, but it's better than none. Better than just sit around and mope. It'd be silly for you, because it'd be a relatively insincere goal. Or would it? They have a formula of how you become the minister of the Baptist Church. And I'm afraid that you've gotten just a little bit above standard formulas. One of the ways you do it is go around and find the deacons and just have them lecture. Sounds strange, but that's all. Another way you do is pick up some poor divinity student who's better off dead anyhow. He's practically dying. Hang him up, make him up, patch him up a little bit, and parade him on down like a doll and put him on the pulpit. Interesting. You could run him part-time. You know, a guy came in one day who had a lot of... Oh, he just been ennui, just so bored. Existence, all of his existence. Very conservative and so on. I saw him a few days later, and this guy looks like a quarter horse or a short-distance runner. Panting, big, bright, terrific look in his eye, and so forth. And he was, I said, what's happened to you? He said, well, it wasn't anything worth doing, so I made up something to be worth doing. I said, what was that? I won't tell you what it is, because it's very amusing. And he thought up that one and then thought he could do something else simultaneously, so he was working on each one part-time. And boy, keeping those two straight was more than he could possibly keep track of, and he was really going all out. He was going to bring about the confederation of two completely impossible opposite polarities and merge them. And he was proceeding to do so. And one of these days you'll see a very strange circumstance happen, some department or other. You'll see a lot of them happening. Now you call this interfering with people's lives. Piffle. What lives? Now you'll find out there's a certain number of people that go for broke. And there's a lot of them that say, oh boy, gee, these beautiful, beautiful slave chains. Oh, how nice. Nice, nice big chains around my neck and my ankles and so on. The hardest thing for any liberator to face is the fact that a large percentage of the people he was trying to free wanted desperately to be slaves. And it's broken the heart of every liberator to date. To date, hardly any exception. A man would have to be awfully stupid not to see that. But he would be pretty dull if he didn't see this, too. Sure. Sure. But the guys he did liberate were worth liberating. Wow, I try to get these allnesses. That's typical messed universe. We have to do it 100%. I used to fall in those traps, too. We have to do it all. We have to do it 100%. The Christian goes about in the opposite direction. He says the one that got away from the flock and we had to bring back was worth all the rest. That he's just obeying the laws of flows. Don't you see? The guy walks away, so he's got to be had back. That's not what we're... isn't the same thing. But, sure... Another fellow would take a refuge in this. If he sees this happen, he all of a sudden says, well, maybe fate decided it. Maybe it was all for the best, and maybe fate decided it. Your fate. There is no other fate but thou. That's true. And so you say, I'm going to free all and every... No, you're not. Unless you were willing to become all and every and then be yourself free. That's a way to do it. Why bother? No randomity. So pick up what you can get as freedom. And then if the other thing is too much in the road still, it's still got all them bar slaves in it. Those fellows that are saying, oh boy, give me that mess, give me those chains, let me haul on the bottom of this tombstone so I get it good and heavy so I'll never be able to crawl out from under it. Let them stay there, to hell with them. That's their hard luck. And the other thing is, there's the guys that go for broke and the slave who wants his chains. You can always use a slave. gives randomity. They never do anything for you. They always pull you down. Gives you randomity. You know, in every Roman triumph, they had a slave drifting along, trotting along back of the great victor's chariot. He came home in triumph. He just conquered the Basques or the Lions Club or something of the sort. They always had somebody, a slave, standing there telling him he was just mortal after all. He was just mortal after all. You can't control everything. That's right. In every one of those triumphs, they had that guy behind the victor. Well, that's fine. That's fine. Well, that's what slave does, essentially. He's saying, look, you can't make God out of everybody. You can't do it. I'm proving it. Look at me. And he gives you randomity as a result. So why worry about those things? Why worry about those things? It is a game. It is not serious. But what is serious is making a game and not having a game. That's kind of serious. Unless you are just willing to go clear on up, shoot the work straight on up to the top into the beautiful serenity and just be above beingness there. Straight on through. There might be spheres and areas on Theta that you could then move across into that would be different than game areas. If there are, I do not know about them. And I know many areas in which Theta is operating. And whether they know it or not, they're operating on the laws of games. One way or the other, they're operating within these laws, which I've read to you. And they don't know these exist, which is the beautiful joke on the whole works. There are universes which know every law you've got in the messed universe and don't know the rules of games. So you could set yourself up to be an inter-universal umpire team. You could. And get away with it. Well, what do you want to do? If you have these rules of games, you can tell yourself that there are all kinds of things to do. The first thing you've got to do is become a good, solid Theta clear. Let's take a break.